All right, for those of you who have not been with us for the last few weeks, whether here in the auditorium or online, or if you're listening later on, we've been covering our two founding documents, which for some would seem to be a little bit weird for Sunday morning Bible class, but Christians living in a representative republic need to know the kind of governance that they have so that we can interface, because part of our responsibility as believers is to be good citizens. Daniel Webster said that what makes men good Christians also makes them good citizens. So it's inherent in a republic that Christians be engaged. Now, a lot of folks will argue, well, Jesus, nor Paul, nor the other apostles encourage Christians to get involved in government. Well, that's one of the reasons that I wrote this book on Romans 13, 1 through 5. That is not specifically the passage that people use, but they'll argue, well, the reason why Jesus, nor Paul, nor the other apostles emphasize government, I think, is at least twofold. One is that was not their mission. Jesus came to die as a ransom for sinners, okay? He wasn't here to straighten out the government. Now, in his preaching and teaching, there are principles that he covered that can be used to straighten out the government. The Bible is filled with these principles. But that was not his mission, nor was it the mission of Paul and the other apostles. Their job was to plant the New Testament church and get it started with the help of God as the Holy Spirit worked through them. In fact, the book of Acts is the Acts of the Holy Spirit in the early church, right? So that was not their mission. But there's a second reason, and that is they didn't live in a representative republic. They lived in the Roman Empire under a dictatorship. Now, the Roman Empire, many, many centuries earlier, had been a republic. But by the time Jesus comes and the apostles are here, it's not a republic. It's a dictatorship, often under the thumb of a tyrant. Well, there's no need in telling Christians to engage and make your government better. They had no ability to engage in their government. The only thing they could do is to try to stay out of the government's way and hopefully not get too crossways with the government, right? Because you're not going to change a dictatorship. So that's one of the reasons why in the New Testament you don't have a lot of teaching on how Christians are to interface. Now you fast forward to 1776, and by the way, if you need an outline, lift your hand. Tom and Pam have those, and they'll make sure that you get one, and if we need extras, we can print them. But fast forward to 1776 in the 18th century in North America, you don't have a dictatorship. You have a representative republic. Well, now the ability for Christians and citizens alike, whether they're Christians or not, but certainly Christians, to interface with their government is not only possible, it's required. Remember when Benjamin Franklin says to Mrs. Powell outside the Constitutional Convention when they're adjourning, what kind of government have you given us, a monarchy or a republic? You remember he says to her, a republic if you can keep it. Now, the reason why he adds that if you can keep it is because republics are historically rare and fragile. They're very difficult to keep because you've got the rule of the people. And power always wants to consolidate, and evil people then get a hold of that consolidated power, and they rule with absolute authority. And then based upon whether or not they're a benevolent person or a nefarious person, you either have tyranny or you have some level of liberty, even under a monarchy or a dictatorship. Now, that's just history. That's the way it is. So most people have lived under tyranny. When you read through history, there are just a few bright spots along the way where men and women have been free to live their lives as they believe God was directing and dictating to them. Typically, they're under the heavy thumb of some dictator. Today, in our world today, in 2020, most people living on planet Earth are living under some level of tyranny. They do not have the kind of liberties that we do. So now then, when you take the Christian church, you place Christians in North America in a representative republic, it's then incumbent upon citizens, especially Christian citizens, to understand that if we don't engage, we're going to lose the republic. Now you say, well, you know, God's work will still continue. Nobody's arguing that. Well, we'll go to heaven whether we live in a republic or not. No one's arguing that. My question to you is, do you want to live in a republic or do you want to live in a dictatorship? Which one would you prefer? Well, obviously, we would prefer a republic, because in a republic, we are able to live out our liberties, our unalienable rights that we've received from God, right? So that's why, at times, we wouldn't want to just do it consistently all the time, but at times, we need to take a Christian look at our own form of governance to make sure that we understand how our government works. So as Christians, we can engage in that government. So for those of you who haven't been around for the last few weeks, it's only been two presentations spread out over a few weeks of lessons on this. We typically go through some book of the Bible. In fact, I think we're about to embark upon a study on angels. So if you've never done that, that's going to be really cool. So we'll spend a number of weeks here in the class reading about what God has to say in His Word about angels and their ministry, which if you've never really done a study on angels, any kind of an in-depth study, it is one of the most amazing journeys you will ever take. Now, most Christians know a little bit about angels, but they'll say, well, you know, the Bible doesn't say that much. That's not true. The Bible says a great deal. So typically in this class, we're focused. We just finished, as you know, if you've been attending, the first 11 chapters of Genesis. So it's not like we ought to constantly be talking governance. But we're right here staring at an election, which could be, at least at the federal level, one of the most critical elections ever in my lifetime. Not because we're trying to get a Republican in office. It's really not about Republican and Democrat anymore. It may have been 25, 30, 40 years ago, but I can tell you it isn't now. Now it's between a choice between those who want basic Christian morality in America and those who have gone far left and want an amoral, which there's no such thing. It's either moral or immoral. There is no amoral. So ultimately, they're going to want an immoral America where anything goes and the loudest voices are heard, and it doesn't matter what percentage of the population you represent. If you can burn enough buildings, then you're going to get your way regardless, i.e. Black Lives Matter. So the choice now is not between Republican and Democrat. Now, I realize those are still the two mainline parties, but if you match the party platforms, guys, you've got a pro-God and an anti-God platform decision here. That's why this election, you know, we've heard this all of our lives, this is the most important election in our lifetime. Well, this one actually may be. It may actually live up to that billing, because I cannot imagine life in America under President Kamala, because that's what it's going to be. It's not going to be President Biden. I think if Biden wins, it won't be 6 months, and he will admit that he's suffering the early stages of dementia, and he will resign, and it'll be Kamala Harris, or Kamala Harris, however you want to pronounce it. And Kamala Harris has the most leftist voting record in the Senate. Now, that's saying a lot, because Bernie Sanders is in the Senate. She's left of Bernie Sanders. That's what's at stake. Now, let me show you what's at stake today. I don't know that it will happen, but today John MacArthur may be arrested, because a judge this week reversed all of the previous court decisions and said he cannot meet, his church cannot meet at Grace Community Church. Now, through this whole battle for the last month or so, the courts have consistently said you can't shut them down. But this week, a judge said you cannot meet. Now, they're going to meet. And so it's quite possible, I don't know, it'd be a really bad move on their part if they arrest John MacArthur, but I think there's a good possibility that John MacArthur will be arrested today. Now, he won't be in jail but 5 minutes or so, because, of course, he'll post bail. But my point is, would you have ever believed that you would live to see a day in America when a guy like John MacArthur, who is not a cult leader, he's not some crazy, wild-eyed preacher, he's really a solid preacher of God's Word and has been for many decades, is under the threat of going to jail for having church in California. Now, we say, well, that's California. Those people are the left coast and they're nuts. Guys, if you will look at our history over the last 50 years, what starts in California doesn't stay in California. It moves eastward across the country, and we eventually are facing the same stuff in 5 to 10 years that the people were facing in California just that long previous. Don't think it can't happen in Oklahoma. And I promise you, if it's President Kamala Harris, it's coming to Oklahoma. whether we like it or not. That's why this is so important. And that's why I thought it was important for us to do this series of lessons. So for those of you who may not be as familiar with what we're doing here, I don't want you to think that I believe government's the answer and that all we do is talk about government here. But we're staring down the face of a pivotal moment in early November coming up here in just a few weeks. And I think it's critical that we understand at least what we were at our founding and how as Christians that should affect how we function. Did you realize that half of Christians don't even vote in America? 50%. There are 15 million Christians that aren't even registered to vote in America that are of voting age. Now, what kind of a difference do you think 15 million would make if they'd go out and register and vote? And vote the right way. Vote biblical principles. Forget about Republican and Democrat. As I said, we're way beyond that. What do you think the difference would be if the 50% of Christians that are registered that don't vote would go vote and vote the right way? You think it would make any difference at all? Well, of course it would. Now you say, well, you know, I'm not into politics. Well, really, to be honest with you, I'm not either. I hate it. I've been in it. It's terrible. But it's only terrible because the church said, well, I'm not into politics. And in a representative republic, if you take the salt and light out of the republic, what does the republic become? Well, it eventually becomes a dictatorship. Because that's the human condition. Power consolidates and moves toward a single group or person. Typically, it's a group. It's never just one person. So it's typically an oligarchy. And everybody's liberties are squashed. And you have whatever freedoms they deem you worthy of. You say, well, I don't know about that. De Blasio, the mayor in New York City just a few weeks ago, said there will be no parades, no public gatherings except for BLM. Different laws for them. Do you see the inconsistency there? Right. And so these mayors, Mayor Holt in Oklahoma City, who are telling you, you have to wear a mask. Well, where did they get that authority? Where did that come from? And by the same power, they could tell you, you have to wear flippers, or you have to wear a suit of armor, or you have to stay in your house. Yeah, see, you got to take a vaccine. We're going to force it on you. See, the point is, if they can grab that kind of power under what they deem as emergency circumstances, which of course we all know that's all trumped up. In fact, this week a new article came out that admitted that a news story a few weeks ago is now true, that because COVID-19 is a part of the coronavirus family, some of the tests can't differentiate between COVID-19 and the common cold. So if you have a common cold, those tests will say you have COVID-19. That's why so many people diagnosed with COVID-19 have cold-like symptoms, because they have the cold. They don't even have COVID-19. So under these dubious circumstances, these mayors and city councils have dubbed themselves as little monarchs, and they're telling everybody how they can live. And even our governor, as much as I respect Governor Stitt, refuses to say that churches are essential businesses, if you want to consider a church a business. He will not say it. Paul and I have asked him to, and he won't do it. He won't declare churches as essential. You say, well, what does that matter? Well, because then, by emergency power, they shut down everything that's non-essential. Guess what's included in the non-essential? Churches! And then you have here, if it ever happened, what John MacArthur's fighting today in Southern California. That's why this is important. Okay, enough of that. I've already blown way too much of our time in our class. Last week, and I'm not going to have time to go back and revisit all this, but in the Declaration, which is our most critical founding document, we're talking about critical concepts. And we were at number 3 or 4 whenever we're talking about the laws of nature and nature's God. And a lot of people don't understand where that phrase comes from. It comes from two people, Blackstone, William Blackstone, who was a British authority on law in the 1600s, that the framers were very familiar with, and then another philosopher on government named John Locke. Most people today will tell you that Locke was a deist or he was an agnostic or whatever, and that his laws of nature and nature's God just meant the laws of nature, like the laws of the jungle. and the survival of the fittest. That is not what even Locke says. So here's a couple of quotes. We saw them last week. I'm not going to give all of them, but he says, "Thus the law of nature stands as an eternal rule to all men, legislators as well as others. The rules that they make for other men's actions must be conformable to the law of nature." Now, by the way, what he's saying there is that legislators have to live under the same laws the rest of us do. A la Nancy Pelosi. You can't go get a hairdo, ladies, but I can because I'm the Speaker of the House. Do you realize the hypocrisy? Well, that's just a hairdo. Well, what if it's something different, like you can't go shop for food, but I can because I'm the Speaker of the House? You see, it begins to change, doesn't it? And the same rules are going to apply. He goes on to say that the laws must be conformable to the law of nature. What is the will of God? Now, all of a sudden, it clarifies what Locke was meaning when he said the laws of nature. He's talking about the God of the Bible, of which that is a declaration and the fundamental law of nature being the preservation of mankind. So this is just one of the quotes from Locke that we looked at last week. And then here's another one where he's talking about Jesus. And he says, "Such a law of morality Jesus Christ has given us in the New Testament. But by the latter of these ways," I'm just parts of his quotes here, "we have from him a full and sufficient rule for our direction and conformable to that of reason. Here morality has a sure standard from God, the great lawmaker." Now, all that just simply points to the fact that when Locke says the laws of nature and nature's God, and Thomas Jefferson writes that in the Declaration of Independence, that was understood in 1776 to be the God of the Bible, and that laws should be conformable to a biblical standard. Now, I'm not suggesting that John Locke was a born-again Christian, nor am I suggesting that Thomas Jefferson was a born-again Christian. But what I am telling you is that the leading thought in the 18th century, when our republic was being formed, is that the God of the Bible is actually the true God, and that laws should conform to biblical principles of morality. So when they talk about morality, they would mean what we often say Judeo-Christian. And what we mean by Judeo is the Old and New Testament, okay? So that was the standard of morality that they were talking about when they talked about morality. They weren't talking about Sharia law, because that's a different standard of morality. And remember again this old saying, you can't legislate morality. Well, then ask the question back immediately. So what do we legislate? The weather? Do we legislate gravity? Do we legislate oxygen? The only thing you can legislate is morality. Every law is a moral standard. The only question is, whose moral standards are you going to use? Legislation is legislated morality, or legislated immorality if it's contrary to God's word. Okay, critical concept number four. We saw it last week. All men are created equal. A lot of people argue, well, they didn't believe that. The framers, they were all slaveholders. They were all pro-slavery. That is not true, first of all. Not all of them were pro-slavery. Not all of them owned slaves. But remember, the 28th grievance in the Declaration that Thomas Jefferson was convinced to leave out. You say, what do you mean the 28th grievance? Well, remember, if you read the Declaration, you have all the principles stated at the first. Then Jefferson lists all the grievances that the colonists had with the king and parliament. Now, there are 27 of them in the Declaration, but there was going to be a 28th. And you can go online and read it. In fact, we're not going to take the time to read it word for word, but here it is. Now, what is that 28th grievance? Well, they were complaining to the king that he wouldn't let them make slavery illegal in the colonies. One of the reasons that the slave owners who hated slavery did not get rid of their slaves is because it was illegal to do so. See, that's what the talking heads today won't bother to tell you. The King of England would not allow the colonies to outlaw slavery. So that was their 28th grievance. You say, well, why is it in the Declaration today? Because Jefferson and his other four committee members, the Committee of Five that wrote the Declaration, Jefferson being the primary author, were convinced by the other delegates at the Continental Convention that ultimately approved the Declaration and declared independence from Great Britain, convinced him that if he left that 28th grievance in, they would lose some of the southern colonies. Well, remember, they only have 13 to start with. And they were primarily concerned about North Carolina, Georgia, maybe South Carolina. Well, you lose those three colonies. Now they're down to 10, and they didn't feel like they had any chance against the British with 13. They felt like they even had less of a chance with 10, right? I mean, just put yourself back in their time. Remember, as I've told you before, you cannot look at our founding period from 20th or 21st century eyes and understanding. You have to go back to their period of time and understand from their culture the problems then. It is not fair to judge everybody that lived in the 18th century as slaveholders or proponents of slavery just because they lived in that period of time. It would be just as unfair if 150 or 200 years from now, people look back at us and said all of us were pro-abortion. They say, well, no, we're not. Well, you didn't end it, did you? Well, that's a little easier said than done. We've been fighting trying to end abortion now for 4 decades. And some of us have fought hard. My point is, ending slavery was just as difficult, and the king wouldn't let them, and they were still under his control. So that's the 28th grievance. And then, of course, the three-fifths compromise that today is misquoted by many and say, well, they said that black people were three-fifths of a person. That's not what that is. The three-fifths compromise said that the southern colonies could only count three-fifths of their slaves to be counted toward apportionment and representation in Congress. See, if they could have counted all their slaves, it would have given the southern colonies an edge, and the other framers were afraid that slavery would be pushed on all the colonies. So they said, you can only count three-fifths of your slaves. They weren't saying that slaves were three-fifths of a person. They were saying, to gain your representation in Congress, you can't count all of your slaves, because it would have given those southern colonies an edge. That's all that is. So when you hear this stuff today, understand that they are not telling you the whole truth. Critical concept number 5. In the Declaration, Jefferson says something that is far more critical than most of us believe or catch, and that is that we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. Now, you must understand that this was very countercultural. The kings in those days ruled by what power? Anybody remember the term for that? Divine right. See, the king argued that God gave him or her, but typically the king or the queen, gave the king the power. And then the king would distribute it to the people as he saw fit. That was the dominant philosophy of government. So understand, we've lived in a republic all of our lives, and this is just, oh yeah, well, I knew that. You must go back to the 18th century, and don't look at it through 21st century eyes. Look at it through 18th century eyes. This was incredibly revolutionary, that God gives rights to the people first, not to the king, not to parliament. The rights come from God directly to the individual. Now, in just a moment, he's going to tell us how then government gets its authority. But understand, the Declaration says the authority comes from God directly to you. So your rights are not a gift of government. Government cannot say, we will allow you to do thus and thus. And I've noticed during this COVID thing, well, we're going to allow certain businesses. What do you mean going to allow certain businesses to open? Who gave you the power to tell which businesses can and can't open? Well, we're only going to allow the essential ones. Well, you know what I'll bet? I'll bet every small business owner, to them, their business is essential. Won't you figure that? Yeah. So how do they decide arbitrarily what is and is not essential? See, this is why understanding these concepts, even as Christians, is so critical. Because we're starting to live in the beginning stages of devolving into some type of monarchy or dictatorship. We're just now beginning to taste the early stages. California is further along than we are. It's very, very unfortunate. And if the church does not wake up in America and start exerting our rights under God, friends, I'm telling you, most of us will end our lives in some kind of hard tyranny, and our children and our grandchildren will live under tyranny. They won't even know what it's like to be free. Now, we've said that before. Guys, that is no longer a cliche. So, I feel some passion and urgency in this because I travel around and I speak in all these places. I was in Fairview, Oklahoma yesterday and spoke at a gathering there at the city park. And I was reminding them that if the church does not re-engage, we're going to lose it all. I think we're losing it now because the church hasn't engaged. It's the reason that we're in the mess that we're in now. The church won't speak out. Look at how many churches that are completely silent. Look at how many churches that aren't even meeting yet. The president of the Southern Baptist Convention, J.D. Greer, said his church won't even reopen until 2021. Now, how do they keep a church in operation for that long? I've talked to a lot of pastors whose churches were closed for 3 or 4 months, and they're having a hard time getting their people to come back to church. My brothers in Fort Smith attended a church that at one time, now they had satellite churches, so this wasn't all their attendance, but at one time right before COVID hit, they were running over 800 on a Sunday. Right now, they're doing good to have 100. They can't get their people to come back. Now, maybe that just shows us who the real believers were and who the fakers were. I don't know, but I'm telling you, we're paying a heavy price. So, rights come from God. Here's the critical concept number 6. To secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. Now, notice here, he's telling us then that governments are created by men who have the rights from God. Do you see the progression? God, individuals, government. See, they were living in the colonies where it was God, government, the individual. So Jefferson is flipping the order in the Declaration. And of course, the Constitution comes out of the Declaration. So governments are instituted among men. Now, I'm not a huge fan of Alexander Hamilton because he was kind of a big central government guy, and he was responsible for the national bank concept and all that. So I'm not a huge fan of him. But when people say something right, it's right no matter who says it. I mean, even if the devil tells the truth, if he told the truth, it's still the truth, right? So in Federalist 33, Hamilton says, if the federal government should overpass the just bounds of its authority and make a tyrannical use of its powers, the people whose creature it is. Now I want you to catch that phrase because it's very important. Whose creature it is. What's the creature? The federal government. So notice what he's saying is the people created the federal government, not the other way around. Must appeal to the standard they have formed. Now, the standard would be the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. And take such measures to redress the injury done to the Constitution as the exigency, that means the urgent need, may suggest and prudence justify. So notice what Hamilton is saying here is government is created by the people. And if the government gets out of line, the people need to retake the authority and fix their government. This is a very revolutionary thought in the 1700s. You must understand, put yourself in that position. Now, this flows then into critical concept number 7. The Declaration then says, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Notice then, the government does not get its power from God. Now you say, well, then government's not of God. No, the concept of government is a godly concept. Remember, there are 3 institutions God established so we can have a civil society. The home, the state, and the church. Those are the 3 institutions. Bible preachers and teachers all over the country, really all over the world, would agree with that. Those are the 3 institutions that are established in Scripture so that mankind, fallen as he is, can live on a fallen planet and try to do so civilly without just killing each other all the time. Now, we haven't abided by that much in history, so we've killed each other all the time. 20th century was the most deadly century in human history so far because we invented more unique and better ways of killing each other so we could kill more of us. It's amazing. It's true. Okay, so then, government is of God, but the progression is God gives authority and rights to the people. The people create governments and delegate certain powers to their government. Now remember the word delegates, very important. Delegate means to loan, not surrender. So when powers are delegated to someone, they're not surrendered, they're delegated, loaned. meaning that if the person who's received those loaned powers begins to misuse them, then the one who gave the powers to begin with can retake those powers because the power was inherent in them. So then notice here two important things. Government derived their just powers from the people, and not only from the people, but the consent of the people. So the whole concept of government doing the will of the people is inherent in that phrase. So when we send James Langford and Jim Inhofe as senators, when we send our congressional delegation up to the House, to Washington, when we elect our state legislature, senators, representatives, governor, and all that, guys, do not fawn over them. I'm sickened by how Christians will gather around a Christian legislator, and forgive me, I know James. In fact, he filled in my pulpit a number of times when I was at Trinity. He's a Baptist preacher, but I watch Christians just fawn over James Langford. Oh, I got my picture made with James. Do you realize he's your employee? He is not royalty. When I was in the House of Representatives here in the state, people would say, well, you know, Dan, I've known you for years, but what do you prefer that I call you, honorable or representative? I said, how about Dan? Just how about Dan? They said, yeah, but I mean, what I'm introducing, okay. I said, in a public setting, if you feel like it's important to say Representative Fisher or whatever, I mean, I'm okay with that. But I'm just me, and I'm your employee. I am not now a member of royalty because I got elected. I was going back and forth with Mayor Holt in Oklahoma City over all the COVID rules that he was making, and he was actually responding back and forth to me, and he was talking about how they were going to listen to the officials, the medical officials. And I said, well, Mayor Holt, you realize that those medical officials are no smarter than the ones who are not elected or appointed. I said, this may surprise you, but I was just as smart before I became a member of the legislature than I was after. In fact, I'm not so sure that after being in the legislature, I wasn't dumber than I was before I went there. And I said, my point is, just because someone is appointed to a government agency or elected to a government position does not make them smarter than everybody else. There are physicians all over the country and literally all over the world who are showing evidence refuting what these government medical officials are saying. They're refuting the CDC. They're refuting Fauci. They're refuting Dr. Birx, all of it. And eventually, they're all being forced to admit certain things. The CDC admitted 2 weeks ago that 94% of all the COVID deaths weren't because of COVID. That they were other comorbidity problems, and COVID was just a contributing factor, and they didn't die of COVID-19. But the reason the hospitals are so bent to have them die of COVID-19 is they get a huge government kickback for every patient. Do you realize that the patients that were dying on ventilators were paying hospitals off by $40,000 when they died? Didn't come from the patient, came from the government, which is us. Now, if they didn't die on a ventilator, I'm told the hospital got half of that. This is why early on they were sticking all these patients on ventilators. And by the way, now they know that many of the patients were killed by the ventilator. If they hadn't put them on the ventilator and inflated their lungs up so much, they would have lived probably. But there was more money in it. You say, well, I can't believe that some, really? That some wouldn't do it for money? Of course. That's why people who have actually been killed by gunshots, but they found out that they had COVID, they put COVID as a cause of death. Well, maybe that hole in their forehead had something to do with their death. There are families having to sue the government to get the death certificate corrected by a loved one who died of dementia and had been battling with dementia for years, but because they had COVID, they said their cause of death was COVID. Okay, that's what all of this is about. That's why understanding these things is so important. Okay, so it's the consent of the governed, not the consent of, well, we'll let you stay open. What do you mean you'll let me stay open? No one gave you the authority to tell me whether or not I can stay open. And as long as we bow down like sheep, they're going to keep running right over us. James Madison, now this is going to fill in the blanks, Elaine, so here we go. Madison, in the Virginia Resolution, 1798, said, in a case of deliberate, palatable, and dangerous exercise of other powers. What do you mean other powers? Powers the people didn't consent to. Not granted by the said compact. He's talking there about the Constitution. The states who are parties thereto, meaning the states created the federal government and created thus the Constitution, have the right and are in duty bound to interpose for arresting the progress of the evil. Now, I want you to notice, first of all, that Madison calls the overreach of federal government evil. That's actually a spiritual term. Also notice he says that the states have a responsibility. They have a right and are duty bound to interpose. What does interpose mean? Well, you get in between the offending party and the innocent. So like, for instance, somebody's trying to beat up on someone, you interpose, you get between them. The sheriff is to interpose between bad guys and the citizens. The police, city police department, they're supposed to interpose between the bad guys and the citizens. That's what interpose means. So notice what he's saying here. The states have to reel in the federal government. But guys, that has been lost and forgotten now. And people in the legislature downtown Oklahoma City are always saying, well, what will the feds do? When I was in there, they said, what will the federal government do? I said, who cares? It is our job to interpose and protect the people of Oklahoma from this crazy, out-of-control federal government. So that's important that you understand that. All right, critical concept number 8, and this is the last one, and we're going to wrap it up here. Critical concept number 8, the right, and then later on, the duty of the people to alter or to abolish or throw off an out-of-control government. Now, I realize it's not worded that way. He says, if the government ever ceases to fulfill its primary role. And by the way, what is the primary role according to the Declaration of Independence of the government? To secure our rights given to us by God. So the sole really responsibility of the government is to protect your rights. Not to build a highway. Not to take care of health care. See, now that's become the primary role of the government and protecting our rights. They don't care about that. They trample all over those. But according to the Declaration, that's their first responsibility. So if they cease to do that, Jefferson says, then it is the right and the duty of the people to alter, abolish, or throw it off. Now, that's a 3-level alarm there. So let's just look at it very quickly. Alter, that's level 1. What is alter? Well, our government's kind of gotten out of control, so we're going to alter things. We're going to correct it. It's like a course correction. So you alter it. All right? Our government's gotten beyond that point, and they've messed it up so bad we can't fix it. Then you abolish it. That means you just wipe the slate clean, start over. In fact, I'm convinced if our framers were alive today, they would be amazed that we haven't already done that. I don't think they could have ever envisioned that the exact form of government that we started with we'd still have today. And I don't mean that we ought to go in and change everything, but I think they would have expected some major changes. Guys, look at the Supreme Court. That needs major changes. They're one of 3 branches, but no longer. They're the branch, and they decide for everybody else. That's not what the framers intended. There's a whole chapter in this book on the tyranny of the courts. You need to check that out. Okay, so you abolish it. So that means you start over. But what happens if you void it even some more too long? And now your government's become a tyranny. Well, then you have no choice but to throw it off. Now, what does that mean? You have to fight. Thank you, Miss Lucy. You have to fight. That's where they were. That's depending on which way you count. That's either DEFCON 1 or DEFCON 3. So this is either level 3, level 2, level 1, or level 1, level 2, however you want to do it, from worst to best or best to worst. But this is the worst situation. They've become a tyranny. You have to throw it off. And that's what the colonies were doing. And they knew it might mean war. They didn't want war, but they knew it could come to that. But you have to throw it off. You have to fight now. Is that what we're going to do? Because we're almost there. America is almost to DEFCON 3. We blew way past alter. We're sitting right here and we're almost there. So, see, Jefferson saw this in 1776. Now, I want to close with a couple of quotes and then we're done. Jefferson, in his Kentucky resolution, which is the counterpart to Madison's Virginia resolution. And by the way, they're both written in 1798. Let me tell you why. They were written because of the Alien and Sedition Acts, which basically said, if you speak evil of the federal government, we put you in jail. What? Where did freedom of speech go? So listen to what he wrote. He said, whensoever the general government, when he says general, he's talking about what we call federal. The federal government assumes undelegated powers. That means they go beyond what we told them they could do. Its acts are unauthoritative, void, and of no force. So when you read the Constitution, will you find in there anywhere that says that they can force you to buy health insurance? No, it's not there anywhere. You have to bend the Constitution for it to say that. So according to Jefferson, the author of the Declaration of Independence, that act, the Obamacare Act, is unauthoritative, void, and of no force. I actually made that argument on the floor of the State House when I was in the legislature, based on our history. Okay, two quotes for you to think about as we walk out of here. Quote number one, Daniel Webster in 1852 said this, "If we and our posterity reject religious instruction and authority, violate the rules of eternal justice, trifle with the injunctions of morality," that means redefine what morality is, "and recklessly destroy the political constitution which holds us together." Now, when he says political constitution, he doesn't mean the U.S. Constitution. He means our general understanding of how government is supposed to work based upon the Declaration and the Constitution, which holds us together. No man can tell how sudden a catastrophe may overwhelm us that shall bury all our glory in profound obscurity. He is predicting where we are right now. Guys, we are on the precipice of a sudden catastrophe that could so overwhelm us that we lose everything. John MacArthur today may be arrested as an American pastor for having church. You tell me that we're not there. And then one last quote that you've seen before. This is John Adams. John Adams was writing to us. We're his posterity. He said, "Posterity, you will never know how much it costs the present generation to preserve your freedom. I hope you will make good use of it. If you do not, I shall repent in heaven that ever I took half the pains to preserve it." So what he's saying is, it's costing my generation a great deal so you can be free. You abuse those freedoms, and I will disown you in eternity. I wonder if today the framers would disown us. I think the answer is sadly yes. Well, that's why these are so important. Thank you for allowing me to kind of slog through all of this. I hope that it's been helpful to you. I hope that you have a better understanding of our founding documents, especially the Declaration. And you understand now the concepts from which the Constitution emerged. It was the Declaration. That's our most critical founding document. Constitution is secondary. Declaration is primary. Okay? All right, guys. Thank you so much. We'll begin a new study next week. There may be a week or two that we don't do the angels study. I may do a couple of freestanding, but I may just go right into it next week. So if I can get it all together, we'll start an angel study next week, which if you've never done that, I assure you, you will enjoy it. It'll be a lot of fun. All right. We'll have service here in about 10 minutes.